CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, if you'd like to introduce our sponsors.
Sure. Today's show is sponsored by Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, SAP Business by Design. Solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, CFO Magazine stated in 2010, the study that ranks the lowest cost offshore locations for manufacturing and finds that the top spot is right next door in the United States. Until a few years ago, choosing an offshore manufacturing location was fairly straightforward, with finance chiefs and their fellow executives typically focused on a handful of cities in China. But with the volatility in the dollar, fluctuating transportation and commodity costs, and a shifting global economic fortune, the decision has become much more difficult. There was a huge momentum and almost a herd behavior going around to China back in 2005, 2006, and subsequent years, says Stephen Mora, a managing director at Alex Partners and co-author of the consulting firm's new study of manufacturing costs in low-cost locations. He says, China was more competitive than other low-cost countries and had more infrastructure. Now, some of that has changed. The study factors in such important but occasionally overlooked elements as capital equipment, acquisition costs in the offshore location, tax burdens, technical and engineering costs, and freight rates. The lowest cost location for U.S. manufacturers in 2009, believe it or not, Mexico claimed the top spot in 2008 and has retained its ranking since that time. Mora says rising transportation costs and material costs, which hurt China in those formative years, applied to a much lesser degree in Mexico, he says. There really are no more transportation costs in Mexico than if you made something in Tennessee. Companies new to offshoring should aim to build more flexibility into their supply chain from the outset, recommends Mora. Instead of operating one or several large facilities in one country, they should consider establishing smaller operations in a handful of locations. While managing multiple sites adds complexity to a company's operation, it also hedges risk. And thank you to CFO Magazine for that news article. Well, today, Renee Pinces joins us to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Renee.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Well, Renee, you are an interim CFO with Delaney Consulting LLC, and prior to joining Delaney, you served as Senior Vice President, Treasurer, and CFO of Builders Insurance Group, the largest domestic writer of workers' comp insurance in the state of Georgia. Your multi-location and also retail background includes a bankruptcy turnaround with a 250-location grocery chain, and managing hundreds of audit centers at PRGX Global and a 50-unit retail insurance network with Assurance America Corporation. You have about 20 years of insurance expertise, and you started with a BS in accounting from Fairleigh Dickinson University in Madison, New Jersey. You serve on the board of directors of the Georgia Center for Child Advocacy, and you're a guest lecturer on the topics of Sarbanes-Oxley and business planning strategy at the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University here in Georgia. Well, Renee, let's start at the beginning. Tell us about your first job, where you started, and what led you to move into the CFO role.
Well, I come from a family of doctors and lawyers and scientists and artists, and nobody was in business at all. My first exposure to the business world was during high school. I worked in a department store, and I worked for the department manager there. And so I got an exposure to inventory and sales. And it also kind of shaped my ideas about what I wanted to do in university. Between my freshman and sophomore year at Drexel University in Philadelphia, I was living at home with my folks, and I took on a temp job at an insurance company as a claims clerk. And my job was to file and retrieve claims files, very basic. And the company had a holiday party, and I was seated next to the CFO. And, of course, I had no idea what CFO stood for, what his responsibilities were, what he did. And to make small talk, he started asking me about my experiences at university and what sort of courses I was taking. And I told him about my dream to be a shoe buyer and travel to Italy, and my major was retail management. I was just taking the most basic classes, you know, as introductory. And then he asked me if I'd taken any accounting courses and what I felt about those. And I still had no idea what he did for a living. And, you know, I said, yes, I took some accounting courses, and I thought they were dreadfully boring. And it was the bane of my existence.
Music to his ears,
exactly,
I'm sure, at the Christmas party.
And very interested in what my grades were, and I told him that I aced them, but I felt that the class was boring, as I had said. To my surprise, the next week I went to work, the very first day, and I was told by my boss in claims that the CFO wanted to speak with me, and he wanted me to transfer from the claims department to a permanent position in the accounting department working for him. And not only was he crazy to think that after everything I told him about my experience with accounting, but I guess he believed in me for, you know, some reason, and not only offered me a permanent job, he also asked me to transfer universities, which I did, from Drexel to Fairleigh Dickinson, which was closer to home, and he paid for my tuition.
That's quite a mentor at an early age.
Yeah, and, you know, and not only that, Lorraine, not only did he, you know, give me an opportunity and a job and a college career, but he just taught me so much more. There were so many things that he taught me. He truly was a first mentor. He exposed me to things that I don't think that I ever would have been exposed to at any other company.
Could we ask, who is he and what is he doing today?
Actually, he's deceased, I'm sorry to say, but his name is Barry Macta. He's a great man. He built this company, Warwick Insurance Company, many years ago. It was a workers' comp carrier. It was my first experience, as I said, not only in finance but also in insurance. I had experiences with him that I would not have had anywhere else. I had the opportunity to negotiate contracts, so I understood what it was about, you know, reading contracts and negotiating them and the importance of little bits of language, how to interface with people on the outside, whether they're attorneys or accountants, things that we kind of take for granted now, but were very important and things that clearly you don't learn in school. I did my first IPO at the age 19. So I had to go through all of that, checking all of the documents and all of the due diligence related to that. And also he kind of pushed me off the ledge and had me do my first national speaking engagement on behalf of a fraternity brother of his. And so I got up and was sent down to Orlando, and I got to speak in front of a very large group of people, hundreds of people actually, about financial reporting in the insurance industry and how software would change all of that. And I also had my first opportunity to do system conversion because we were going from, yes, I'll say manual books at the time to computing operations.
Wow, that's a fast-packed couple of years for you while you're still finishing your degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was wonderful because he pushed me, you know, to take my the CPA exam and, you know, went down that whole path. And when I started, honestly, I had no interest in accounting whatsoever.
He got you hooked, huh?
He did.
He provided the addiction.
Absolutely.
Well, let's take that path. Clearly, you haven't had the traditional CFO route, if you will. You didn't start as the accounting manager, going on to being the controller, going on to be the CFO. Describe the transitions that you made.
Absolutely. You know, I worked with Barry for 5 years at Warwick, and it was a wonderful experience. And then I transitioned to a new company, and it was a completely different world for me. It was a subsidiary of Beneficial Corporation. So now I was working, you know, from a very small regional company, I went to work for an insurance division, which had many, many companies that were spread all over the world, writing virtually every line of business. But soon after I joined Beneficial, I learned that the management team was going to be buying the whole division out from Beneficial Finance, and we were going to be a spinoff and part of a leverage buyout. So one of my very first experiences that I had, my very first assignments was, I was a newlywed at the time, all of 23 years old, I think. I was shipped off to Amarillo, Texas to help shut down an insurance company. And really, my primary objective was knowledge transfer at that point of time. These people were, you know, long-term employees that had been there, you know, their entire career, some for generations, and how to transfer that knowledge to our company so we could run that business off, either for complete dissolution or ultimate sale. Ultimately, we did sell the company. That experience, you know, was exciting enough, and it taught me the value of understanding how a company relates to the entire organization. When I worked at Warwick, we were all in one building. We were all in one floor, expanded to several floors, but we were still all in one building. You could see everything that was going on in the company. These folks out in Amarillo, they were very remote. They had no idea what was going on in the rest of the company. So it was a new experience and a new exposure for me. When I moved back to the corporate headquarters after that assignment was complete back in New Jersey, I learned that in order for our company to continue to business, as per the regulators, we were relocating the company to a different state. So I was going to be moving to a new state, have a new boss who was just brought in by the CEO, and he was the COO, who was my second great mentor in my career. And I would also be transferred out of accounting and move to a special projects unit. At that time, I don't remember what we called it, but it would be the equivalent of strategic planning and analysis today. And that was the best experience. I mean, it really moved everything into high gear. We were working on the most exciting projects. We were doing things, I think, at that time that hadn't been done in any company before. And we were reporting to the C-level executives, and we were really at their beck and call for any great idea that came up. And, you know, we were responsible for coming up with new ideas ourselves. It was my first exposure to acquisitions, to that whole entire due diligence process, to integration of acquisitions, and international finance. That was a big part of it. And one of the key projects that I had there was I built a capital deployment model. And Joe, the new COO, he liked it so much, he wanted me to present it to a group of board of directors at the next board of directors meeting, which was in Bermuda. And he told me, he said, you know, Renee, if you do a good job on this project, you know, we'll rehearse it first. And if you do a great job, he says, you know, you'll actually get a seat on the inside of the plane. Otherwise, your seat will be on the outside of the plane. And thankfully, I earned a seat on the inside of the plane. And apparently the board was impressed enough that one of our board members, who was the chairman of our European operations, offered me a position as corporate finance officer to work in our London office, starting up new businesses all over Europe. And again, you know, it took me further and further away from accounting, but that accounting foundation that I had was critical and important. I was there for a year when I was called back to the United States to help out with a non-insurance subsidiary that we had, which was a retail grocery chain. Back in New Jersey, would bring me home. And
I was going to ask you a little bit about that, because previous to that, you didn't have any specific retail experience, although I understood from what you were saying about your degree that there was an element of structured learning in your education around retail. And one of the themes that we're going to have today in the radio show is along succession, transition, hiring, and the planning around the finance function, getting the right resources. And a key question in finding the right resource, particularly for the CFO role, for the top slot, is to find somebody with the right experience. You hadn't had that grocery experience, so how did you go about learning about the business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, of course I was a grocery consumer. You know, I'd been inside a grocery store.
You bought apples and oranges, right?
It helps a lot.
You'd
say. Be surprised. And shoes. But everything else I had to learn, you know, to your point. And if you really understand what that transition was like for me, I was really thrown into the fire. you know, there was nobody that was coming on board with me. I won't say nobody. We brought on a general counsel. We brought on some, you know, background, some HR folks. But the sales and operations people were all new to me. And the business was clearly new to me. Our CEO, I knew because he was an executive out of the insurance group as well. But otherwise, we were a blend of management. And so, you know, my first take on it was to go out to the stores and to visit the stores. I did undercover store shops with our security team and our internal audit team. I visited as many store managers as I could. I would sit down in operations and sales meetings. But, you know, basically, I got in my car and I started visiting stores, and that was critical for me to learn.
Is it critical for the CFO to be in the business operations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it gave me a huge perspective on what we were dealing with, because this isn't like, you know, your grocery store down the street. This was a chain of 250 stores. We issued over 12,000 W-2s every year. We had just come to an agreement with the Department of Labor just before I joined there for a large wage and hour settlement, which meant I was issuing another 26,000 W-2s. I had over 60 people in my department, you know, that were calling out to store managers every single day. We were doing roughly $100 million a year in sales. We should have been doing $150 million. We had manufacturing plant facilities where we were processing ice cream and dairy products and milk. We had distribution facilities. We have a fleet of trucks. We had our own, you know, fuel for our fleet. Logistics operations. It was incredible, you know, and it had been nothing that I had been exposed to before. I mean, everything I learned about retail accounting, I forgot the minute I finished the CPA exam, you know. And so inventory, you know, I was scratching the back of my head for experiences that I learned in high school, you know, when I was, you know, counting sweaters and shirts and shoes and trying to get them out there on the floor and understand what was sold. So the concepts were the same. You know, those experiences stay with you forever. But, you know, the only way that I could learn would be kind of, you know, being thrown into the fire.
And I sense from your career transitions and what we're very much talking about in terms of transitions of the workforce, that you were very lucky in that you were, I think you used the term, you had a couple of strong mentors. They clearly saw something in you that was a spark, for lack of a better term. But the realism is that in today's world of getting the job, whatever the job for you is, it's all about networking. It's about the right person who you know, who trusts you, saying, I want you to do X. And what it sounds like in your career is that those people said to you something that was a new element of career for you. It was a change. So you had a lot of trust in them.
Yeah, I think I really did. I was really looking to my mentors. They had taught me so much, both technically and about life and about myself. But I was really looking to my mentors for direction. You know, for a good part of my career, you know, some would say I wasn't really making the decisions on my own. And I really was. And the fact that they made the decision to put me on their team or to put me in place for a particular project, you know, I wasn't sure I really felt I had a choice at that point in time. You know, of course, now I realize that I did and that it was a choice and that I could have said no and I could have done something else and I didn't need to go to Europe and I didn't need to take that CFO job and I could have done other things. You know, some of those choices, you know, I would have been much wealthier than I am today. But they were still valuable decisions that I made on my own. But the fact that they put out, you know, that they put their faith in me, you know, made it very easy for me to put my trust in them. You know, it's all mutual trust and respect, as you know, no matter what you do. So.
And I think part of the lesson from this is if you're a CFO out there or a CEO out there, please listen loud and clear to the message that I'm hearing. In go find people that you can be a mentor to. And pick out the people that are the stars in the organization and help nurture them. But also from your perspective as a mentee, sometimes you take a leap of faith in your career. You don't know where it's going to take you. And it's a bit of a scary decision.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was put in some very frightening situations.
First IPO at 19.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And, on the corporate jet at 23, 24.
Yeah, you know, and I had no idea. You know, I really did. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. It was blind faith. It was like, you know, skiing on the top of a mountain. You know, everything's fine once you've got your ski tips pointed down the hill. But, you know, while you're standing there on the edge, for me, that's the scariest point. And then I just tell myself, all I got to do is turn my skis down. You know, and before you know it, you're enjoying the ride.
Well, talking about enjoying the ride and talking about being at the top of that ski slope, often a CFO's own due diligence in accepting a position and making that transition and move, as you very quickly moved into the CFO role, that decision often garners around you gathering financial information about the company so that you know the risks that you're assuming when you're in the position of the CFO, signing off on the financials, and whether it's a public company or a private company, you don't necessarily need to be under the regulations of Sarbanes-Oxley in today's world to be taking a very big leap of faith in signing off the financials. Did you know one of your earlier positions, the company was preparing for bankruptcy? Did you learn this as part of your due diligence, or was this the shock of your career when you got into the role?
No, not at all. No shock at all. I knew exactly what I was getting myself into. You know, as I said, this was a subsidiary, so I knew exactly, you know, what the financials look like, and I did do my due diligence. That was really important. You know, I'll share with you that I think the CEO, he secretly believed that we could save the company and spare it bankruptcy. But at the end of the day, we did save the company. But, you know, saving that, you know, part of that strategy was actually putting it through bankruptcy and doing it. And, you know, a bankruptcy, a proper one, takes, you know, so much coordination and so much time, so much analysis up front. And we had so many challenges to deal with long before we actually filed, you know, the paperwork. And, you know,
what are those challenges? Maybe give us the top one or two.
Yeah, you know, I think that certainly cooperation from your creditors is going to be paramount. And in our circumstances, you know, we need to keep customers coming in the door. So, you know, cooperation from our vendors was critical as well. But, you know, our real challenges absolutely had nothing to do with the company's financial condition at all. I mean, at least for me personally. My first day on the job was a Monday. You know, this company, before the insurance company that I worked for, before we purchased this company, this was a multi-generational, you know, family-owned business. It just grew out of control. And on my first Monday on the job, you know, I get a call from the accounting supervisor who says that all of our bank accounts have been frozen and we have no cash. So, you know, I was planning for a bankruptcy maybe 10 months out, you know, not for day one. And so that, in essence, was a shock in my life. So, you know, I had never worked in treasury before in my life. I had never had a relationship with a banker. I barely had a bank account, I think, at that stage of my career. You know, maybe an American Express card. And so I got in my car and I drove down to the bank and I met with Jay and I, you know, talked to him and I said, I think we need lawyers involved. And we got a couple lawyers on the phone. And then I picked up the phone and I called the, you know, former owner who had frozen our accounts because we had defaulted on a payment or we were late on a payment. I don't even remember at this point. And, you know, I got things, you know, back on track and we got cash, you know, flowing back in the company and everything worked out at the end of the day. But, you know, I learned more about the responsibilities that you're talking about of a CFO in that first day than I have, you know, in any other day of my career, you know, at all. Everything else is just kind of gravy. But I clearly that was the biggest learning experience for me. You know, you fast forward 7 days from that, my second Monday on the job, you know, one of our employees was shot and killed in broad daylight. It was a tragic, tragic, horrible thing. But, you know, here I am again, you know, thinking I have a job to do. I have to drop everything. And now I'm dealing with the press and I'm dealing with human resources and I'm dealing with insurance and risk management. And do we keep the store
the
open or closed?
Employee.
The death of an employee, how we handle, you know, communications with the employees, with our network, with the employee's family, everything that you can possibly thinking. Nothing that they teach you in school could ever prepare you for this. You know, and again, I'm, you know, barely a teenager, you know, a little older than that. But, you know, after all of these types of things, you know, the preparation for the bankruptcy itself, it seems so logical and organized. And, easy, and you know, I never want to say easy, really, because it's not.
But it's formulaic. There are certain procedures that you've got to go through. There's certainly filings that you've got to go through. The financial aspect of meeting those reporting requirements, they're pretty laid out.
Yeah, they're rules. I mean, you know, there's a playbook that you can go to. No playbook tells me what to do when, you know, we lose an employee like that. You know, and do we keep the store? Do we reopen? Has the store been tainted? You know, that was a big question for us. But, you know, going through a bankruptcy, you know, like I was saying, you know, very analytic, very strategic. You know, there's negotiations involved. You know, aligning your costs, executing on your strategies. That's what it always comes down to. You know, dealing with everything else, the HR and the emotional sides of it, those are critical, you know, being able to do that. And I heard you ask somebody on one of your previous shows, you know, how you deal with that when you have no money. And, you know, for us, it was kind of easy, I hate to say. But, you know, I thank the gentleman who was in charge of sales and ops because he just picked up the phone, called the vendors and said, we need hot dogs, we need soda, we need this, we need that. And the vendors would deliver them to our home office and we would have parties, you know, for the employees. We got the guys in the warehouse to come out and, you know, erect a basketball hoop in the parking lot so people could play basketball, you know, on the break. And, you know, anything that we could do. We couldn't pay them, you know. I mean, we paid them, but, I mean, you know, we couldn't pay them anymore. You know, we couldn't pay them bonuses or give them raises or improve their benefits, but we could certainly be creative. And we could listen to what their problems were. And so that's what got us through. You know?
And I was intending to ask you a little bit in terms of the lessons that you have learned. One clear message that I get from what you're saying is that so much of being the role of the CFO is really leading an employee base that just, by the by, happens to perform a finance function, but that at the C-level, you are really responsible for a department of employees, of people and emotions, and all the aspects of their lives that go to being that labor force.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're 100% correct. I mean, you know, anybody with a little bit of smarts and who understands, you know, that debits are on the left and credits are on the right, you know, can get through the financial side of it. And you can teach somebody, you know, all those skills. But, you know,
so where are we going wrong with the accounting and finance classes in that we don't teach any of the stuff you're talking about?
You know, I don't think it's unique to finance and accounting at all. I think that it's all of our disciplines. You know, it comes to, what did they say, the school of hard knocks, you know, these experiences, you know, how do you give somebody these experiences? And I think that in mentorship, that is one of the most important things that you can do is, you know, I was exposed to so many things at a very young age, you know, maybe at a time when I could understand it better, but, you know, where I had the time to. I don't have the luxury. You know, I still want to learn something every day, but it's just not the same. You know, the volume that's coming through, it's not the same anymore. The lessons may be more or less important, but, you know, it just felt more important back then. And, you know, how you find a way to transition that and transfer that, those experiences to somebody else. You know, part of you said, you know, says, at least for me, says, you know, I don't want someone to go through, you know, the negative experiences perhaps that I did. But, you know, those lessons are really crucial and really critical. And I think sometimes today, you know, to your point, what do we do differently? I don't think we take the time, you know, that's really required to look after the people that are really going to ensure the success of our organizations. You know, succession planning means success, ultimately. And, you know, in order to be able to do that, we need to be willing to let people make mistakes. You know, I encourage my team, we always have a plan B. I mean, you know, we actually have documented plan Bs, but, you know, that allows people to make the mistake here and there, you know, and so they can really understand what the risks are. If everything runs perfect, you know, you're never going to understand how to build an infrastructure around that to prevent that from happening again. And believe me, I tell people, you know, that I work with, I make mistakes every single day of my life. And I understand that it's a valuable lesson, and I hope they're not big mistakes. But, you know, there's things that I wish I had done. I don't have regrets. You know, I just look forward. You know, I learned so much about mentoring and succession planning from the mentors, you know, that I've been fortunate enough to have. They've taught me how to be nimble and to how not to let, you know, disruptions disrupt me. you know, those first couple of weeks, you know, at the grocery store, it's called Krauser's, you know, it's just an unbelievable experience. I don't know that I could relive it. I know I could relive it today because I've learned from those skills. But, you know, it's something that you would not want to wish on somebody. And, you know, I learned from the COO at Consolidated that, you know, you really have to focus, to your point, on hiring the very best people that you can. Pay them as much as you can. You need to compensate them well, you know, even if you think you can't afford it. And you need to understand that you play a critical role in their performance management. I've learned that the simple act of reaching out to someone else and asking their opinion, you know, not only influences them and can make a difference in their world, but it clearly can influence you. You know, diversity and patient capital, you know, they're where your best ideas are going to come from. And the value of giving back to the community. I worked for a gentleman, Jesse Watkins, for many years, and he insisted that we worked with, you know, work with the departments of insurance and that it was our duty to do that. And, you know, I was part of the team that wrote the exams for new agents coming on board and brokers. And that was, you know, a critical learning experience for me, all about networking, all about connecting. You know, I didn't think I volunteered to be, you know, chair of the insurance subcommittee of the Society for CPAs in New Jersey, but, you know, Jesse encouraged me to do it. He mandated. I mean, it was part of our job description. We were expected to have community service of some sort that was tied to our business. So, you know, education.
That's a good lesson learned, and certainly mentorship is one of giving back to the community, whether the mentor is a mentor to an employee or somebody outside of the company or maybe the son or daughter of a friend. It's a critical role, and that very much is a critical role in succession planning, because perhaps not to put words into your mouth, but you've had opportunities that you wouldn't have known about and perhaps thereby wouldn't have taken had you not had people point them out that that was an opportunity and that you were ready for them.
Absolutely. I consider myself very, very blessed, you know, and I put so much of the credit in their hands for being able to do that. And so now I try to do the same thing. You know, I mean, I've spent, you know, I'd say the last 15 years of my career focusing on how to give back in that exact same fashion, you know, provide those opportunities and experiences for people.
So the lesson here is obviously hire the best you can, pay them and compensate them well, and then help provide that opportunity for them for growth.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, nothing would make me happier, and I tell this to people all the time, but nothing would make me happier than for me to, you know, be able to pass the baton to somebody else. And, you know, oftentimes, especially today, where people move around a lot more than we ever did, you know, the person does move into that CFO role. And I have a lot of controllers, you know, that I've been able to groom and put into that CFO role. But, you know, unfortunately, at other companies. And I'm just as happy with that when that happens. Nothing makes me happier because I know that, you know, I played some sort of role in their success, even if it was something as simple as pointing them in the right direction.
Well, in terms of we're talking about employment, hiring, succession planning, I'd like to draw upon a recent experience that you had where you went over to China for a couple of weeks and you were a speaker at an event in China focused on hiring and outsourcing. Our earlier news article was specific to China and outsourcing. And obviously, there's a lot of focus, particularly for the finance function, for the CFO, in terms of reducing the numbers, getting more from your employees, getting more from your workforce, and managing the costs. Not necessarily reducing the costs, but if that can be done, obviously, you've got a double positive there. Tell us a little bit about the event that you were in China, and if you can expand upon the CFO focus on outsourcing as part of the operational management of the finance function.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. The trip to China that I made in October was definitely one of the highlights of my year, if not, you know, my professional life, certainly my professional speaking life, because I was really nervous. You know, I was invited to join a delegation of over 40 executives from all over the globe. They came from I think we were from over 20 different countries, all different factions from
education. And what was the event called?
It was Great Idea. Actually, it was a combination of events. It was coordinated by a company called Great Idea out of Beijing. And it was focused specifically on outsourcing for the financial services industry. So for banking, securities, and insurance. And so my name got thrown into the pot as somebody who would be a contributor. And also from the perspective not only of me being a buyer of outsourcing services in my role as CFO, but also as someone who's providing outsourced services, you know, in the interim with the interim CFO work that we do here at Delaney. And, you know, they really wanted the ability to show off their talents. They being China wanted to show off the talents that they bring. And it was the Chinese government as well as Chinese businesses. And we traveled to five different cities and met with probably, I'd say, about 200 to 300 people in every city that we went. And we visited the technology parks that they've built specifically for this. You know, China, as you mentioned in the original CFO article, is known for their manufacturing outsourcing. But a big piece of what they've been doing is clearly on the service side. Started with technology. Not a lot of customer facing because of the language barriers that they have, but starting with technology, with infrastructure, testing of programs and the like. But they're really wanting to do a lot more. And their company.
So is there a focus on expanding that role? When in the U.S., perhaps we think, or the Western world, we think of a certain handful of countries, notably India. For Europe, there are a couple of different areas that you think of as low-cost outsourcers or call centers. Is China positioning themselves more for that role?
Yeah, you know, I think they would like to be kind of all things to all people, especially in the financial services area. To your point, you know, India, clearly, Ireland in Europe, the Philippines, they've been, you know, traditional as well as areas in the United States, you know, insourcing. But, you know, traditionally they've handled this. You know, China, because of the language barrier, that's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. That's going to be the biggest challenge that's going to keep them from doing the customer-facing work. However, they do see that there's a huge opportunity in financial services to be able to do the back-end work.
And so let's expand upon that. What functions are outsourced?
Absolutely. Well, you know, right now that which is being outsourced besides the technology side of it, there's a lot of reconciliation work that's being done. In the healthcare services side, everything from, you know, just validation that a claim is eligible to payment of claim. There's a very large firm, Genpact. You know, what they're doing is actually doing everything from underwriting through actuarial, through claim payment, everything, as long as it's not customer facing, you know, out of the China area.
So they have these would be everywhere. Administration or back office functions.
Absolutely. And I've used, you know, in my past, I've used these offshore outsourcing functions in the past for accounting, where we had significant amount of reconciliation. If you walk into a situation where you know you have problems, and this is no different than, you know, the services that Delaney offers, you know, you want your staff, you know, I want my staff as the CFO to stay focused on their kind of day-to-day responsibilities. I don't want that to get them to get bogged down. I mean, I want them to have the experience and understand, you know, the challenges where something goes wrong. But if we uncover a problem, you know, wouldn't it be great to be able to separate that off, you know, so they can really stay motivated about what they're doing? And that's really what it comes down to. And I worked for an insurance company where we ran into some problems and we had a significant reconciliation issue, multiple records, very, very difficult, disparate systems, and we were able to offshore that to India and have them process. It was managed here in the United States, but it was all, you know, the functions were performed all in India, and China would like to offer that same service. So there's a lot, if you think about it, especially in the area of reconciliation, where the accounting methodologies are not that different. It's something that can be easily taught, and, you know, they can do it at a significantly reduced cost. You know, sometimes you may have a specific expertise where I think that's where you're going to turn to a firm like Delaney, right? You know, where we have expertise in helping you through a particular aspect, a reconciliation or something, an anomaly, something that's gone wrong, and that still allows you just to function as normal. You know, ultimately, you want to be able to take care of your customers. You want to be able to keep moving as if things are status quo.
Keep the cash flow going, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, when I was speaking with the group in China, you know, they were very interested in hearing what we had to say. And, you know, that was, I think, because I was bringing perspective that they hadn't really been exposed to. You know, they're very focused on these large corporations as their next client. You know, they're big elephant hunters over there. And, you know, I spend my days, you know, walking the streets talking to small and mid-sized businesses. And there's tremendous need, you know, especially for a startup, you know, can't really afford to bring on a full staff. You know, isn't it wonderful to be able to bring that in on an interim basis and kind of fill the gap at least and help you build that infrastructure?
You know? Well, that is really quite intriguing that you've been given the opportunity to go to China and essentially represent some U.S. thoughts and work habits in terms of that offshoring and outsourcing. I'm afraid in terms of timing, we have come to the end component of our show. But before you go, we have a tradition on the show to ask you your CFO tip of the month. Renee, what is yours?
Well, you know, we've talked about succession planning, and I think that that is going to be one of the biggest challenges for the CFO. So my tip of the month is pay it forward and seek out opportunities to mentor others. I think it'll be a huge, huge benefit to you and everybody around you at the end of the day.
Well, that is a great tip. Thank you, Renee. And thank you, Renee Pincez, our guest today, for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thank you to our contributor, CFO Magazine, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, please go to www.delaneyllc.com. Thanks go to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized companies. For more information, go to www.sap.com/SME. And thanks also to Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. Their website is financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. And thank you again for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.